following I read from Memoirs by Mrs. Ellen McMahon of Larimer, North Dakota, the grandmother of Helen McMahon Lewis, with whom I am on this date. This is July 15th, 1972. Mrs. L. McMahon was the mother of Martin McMahon, the father of Helen McMahon Lewis. Helen is married to Earl Lewis, and I'm at their home now. This was written in January 11, 1973, in Larimer, North Dakota. And I now quote a read from her memoirs. I have just passed my 79th birthday, and as I look back over my adult life, so many happenings stand out that I think I will write them down from the time that I was 16 and a half years old. My father lived in Caledonia, Illinois, comma. We formerly lived in Footville, Wisconsin. I had a girlfriend, comma, Mary Ann Conlin, C-O-N-L-I-N, comma, who lived in Broadhead. She wrote me telling me that they were having a Catholic picnic. Three parishes were going together at Broadhead, where the priest lived, comma, and she invited me to come. I had never been allowed to go to many places. I had been to one circus and one picnic in my life, but my mother and father said I could go. I went on the train to Footville, F-O-T-V-I-L-L-E, paragraph. Michael McMahon and Dan Ryan were marshals of the day. They wore badges and a wide red sash over their shoulders. The parade formed at the Footville Church. The people went in wagons and hay racks, all trimmed in red, white, and blue bunting, as it was the 4th of July. And Mary Ann and Ellen Ann is in the quotes. I think that's Mrs. McMahon's name, went in one of the hay racks. The wagons and racks were all crowded with boys and girls, all met at the park at Broadhead, B-R-O-A-D-H-E-A-D, and everyone took a lunch. It was a grand day. After dinner, there was horse racing and other sports, and a gold bracelet was given to the most popular girl. I did not know very many there. In the evening, there was a dance, and Michael McMahon asked me to be his partner for the dance, and afterwards he rode home in the hay rack with me. He was just home, that's a paragraph, he was just home for the 4th of July holiday from Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he was building railroads. When Michael was a boy of about 17 and for some years thereafter, comma, he used to operate a brush-breaking outfit for his father. It was pulled by 14 oxen hitched to a great big plow. He claims that the first time he saw me was when his outfit, with his plow on a stone boat, was moving along the road to a new job, and I came from a side road, and he said, "Hop on, sissy," S-I-S-S-Y, "and have a ride," quotes, and that I turned up my nose just protruding from my sunbonnet, comma, and said, in quotes, "No thank you," quotes, paragraph. When he came home for Christmas, he came to see me. He had written many letters between 4th of July and Christmas, and it was then that he proposed to me. We were to be married and go to Michigan in June, but that was the year of a crash in the money markets. His work was stopped, and he came home on the 4th of July, 1875, and we were married then. I was 17 and a half years old. The company he worked for went bankrupt, and he had no work to do, so he went back and brought home his horses and tools. Paragraph. When harvest time came, he hired out to bind on one of those reapers where two men stand on it and bind the grain into bundles. He was paid $45 for a month's work, and binding required special skill. I stayed at my home during this time. Paragraph. Sometime before this, his father had given him 80 acres of land with a mortgage on it. In 1876, he ceded the land and built our little house, comma. It had four rooms. We moved in during November 1876, and I made plans of all I would do, raising chickens and turkeys. Mrs. Tom Thorpe, T-H-O-R-P, gave me a hen turkey, and so did Mrs. Mosey, M-O-S-I-E, Welch. I raised 40 turkeys and 80 chickens and thought I had done wonders, comma, but the prices were so poor. I only got 15 cents apiece for the chickens alive, and I think it was 95 cents apiece dressed for the turkeys. We planted a wonderful garden. On July the 4th, 1877, we had spring chickens, new potatoes, and new peas from our own garden, and we were so happy. Grandpa and Grandma McNan did not like me. I think it was because I was not rich. Michael could have married another girl, an only child whose people had lots of money. They made it very hard for me, and since I lived so close to them, I sometimes felt very badly. All the rest of the family were pretty good to me. Paragraph. Then in September 1877, my dear little son Martin was born, and how happy we were. My mother came and stayed with me for 2 weeks when Martin was born, but in December 19th, my dear mother died from typhoid fever. How I missed her and her dear letters. This Martin is Helen McMahon's father. That was in parentheses. Paragraph. In the spring of 1878, on one of the first day's work in the field, one of our horses got hurt and died. We only had two horses. So Pa decided that farming was not for him. He would go back to railroad work, as he had had a letter from some men wanting him to work for them. Period. He rented the farm and went at once to Mason City, Iowa. I remained on the farm. Julia Forbes, F-O-R-B-E-S, came to stay with me at night. Pa went the first week in April and came home in August for a week. Then he went back. Paragraph. He had cleared off 20 acres on our land from Russian trees, and they seeded it to wheat. They did not raise much wheat there in those days, but it was very good and yielded well. We took wheat to the mill for flour. It seemed, though, that I could not make good bread out of that flour, and if I did, and if I do say so it myself, I could make good bread. The man's wife who rented the farm showed me her bread, and it was lovely, but I couldn't make mine like hers. Bread was my living. We couldn't do without bread. Finally, I went over and asked her how she made hers, but she said she did it just the way I was doing it. One day, a little later, her nephew had dinner with us, and I was making excuses for my bread. Then he told me she bought flour at the store and mixed it half and half with the flour we had made. I did the same, and from then on had just a good bread as hers. I always thought that a mean little thing to do, but people had funny ways in those days just as they do today. While Pa was in Iowa, we had three old sows, and they all had pigs. I carried water and fed them all that time that he was away, and I milked our one cow. I thought I did pretty well for a town girl. My sister Mame came and stayed with me. My father had married again and gone to Denver to keep a hotel. Grandpa and Grandma McMahon were living alone. Aunt Nell was at her sister's, Mrs. John Duffy, D-U-F-F-Y, in Iowa. Mame and I were alone when such a bad electric storm came up. It was terrible. I thought I could hear my mother calling me, but she was dead. I woke up Mame and told her. We both listened and could hear her again. Then Mame said, that is Grandma Coates. I got up and opened the door and lit the lamp. Then Grandma called again and said their house had been struck by lightning and she couldn't get Grandpa out. Poor Mame, just 16 years old. That was awful, but put on a wrapper, took her rosary beads in her hand and in her bare feet ran out into the storm, and I heard her say, good Jesus, protect me, I thought I couldn't leave my baby Mart to go, but I took courage and left him alone and ran to help too. Paragraph. Just as I arrived, Grandpa came out. He had been stunned, and in a few minutes the house and everything in it was gone. We could see Grandma's shawl hanging in the kitchen. We were afraid to let Grandpa go back in, but he went in and got it for her. All he could get in there was a box of matches. Paragraph. There stood poor Grandma in her nightdress, and the rain coming down and the thunder and lightning flashing and both of them crying. I took her by the arm, and Mame took Grandpa, and we went to my house. Mart had slept through all of it. We had some tea and fixed ginger tea, as they were both shaking, and so was I. Oh, such a night. They didn't even save a dress to put on, but Grandma came out. She took a pillow and a quilt with her, and she forgot her clothes, and that was all that was saved. Tommy Flynn, F-L-Y-N-N, and John Murphy were caught in the storm and went into the schoolhouse just over the hill from us. They were so near and yet so far. I was sick in bed the next day, and dear old Grandpa and Grandma forgot that I didn't have money. And we were always the best of friends after that storm. The next spring, in April 1879, Pa went to St. Paul and took 10 miles of work from capital D, capital C, Shepherd, S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D, who was the head contractor for the Great Northern Railroad. He would take a contract to build the whole railroad job for the year and then let sub-track contracts, usually for 10 or 20 miles, to contractors like Pa. The end of the Great Northern Line was at Alexandria, Minnesota, and he went to work out from there. He got started and then sent for me. This was my first trip so far west. Pa was to meet me in Minneapolis, but he did not arrive, so I stayed all night at the Nicholas Hotel there and left in the morning on a mixed freight train for Alexandria. I left at 5 o'clock in the morning and got there about 6 o'clock that night. Again, there was no one to meet me, but I saw our horses and our buggy driving down the street. Pa had sent a boy I knew to meet me, as the head man from St. Paul had come, and Pa had to go with him to take over more work. We left the next morning for Evansville, 35 miles through unsettled country. While there, I boarded in a big log hotel where there were all Norwegians who couldn't speak English. Pa was gone all day, and I had no one to talk to, and I was terribly lonesome. There were people coming and going all the time in covered wagons, but only 3 families made up the town. Pa was a good manager and hustler, if I do say it myself. He had his contract about finished when another contractor, who did not know his business, was way behind with his work, and the steel-laying gang was coming up on him. Hence, if this job was not finished at once, they would be held up. So D.C. Shepherd asked Pa to take charge of this delayed job and hurry it to completion. This was August 1879. To begin with, this poor contractor had a bad piece of work, sort of soft muskeg, M-U-S-K-E-G, and for several rods the grade would keep sinking. There was brush everywhere, so he decided to pile in brush to make a base for the grade. They were going after the brush with just plank on the wagon. Pa was standing on these planks and an axe was laying nearby. Is that somebody here? Laying nearby. No, Helen didn't come in. Laying nearby. A jolt of the wagon threw the handle of the axe into the spokes of the wagon wheel and against the bolster stake, and it whipped around, catching Pa's toe at the foot at the big toe and sliced it clear through to the heel. He bled terribly. He lay there with over 100 men around him, and no one knew what to do. They tied a string tightly around the leg, but still it kept bleeding. I was quite a distance away when I saw him hanging onto the wagon and all the men gathered around, and I knew something had happened, so I ran to where they were. I tried to find Grandpa McMahon, as he was always good at knowing what to do when anyone was hurt. This was just a month before Will was born, but I ran from one barn to another and from tent to tent. It was quite a way between these, and I had run so far I thought I couldn't go any further when a boy came along, and I sent him to look in the other barns. He found Grandpa in the last one. When Grandpa heard what had happened, he ran down to Pa, and the first thing he did was cut the string. The men didn't want to let him do so. I can see him yet, pushing them back and cutting it. The foot stopped bleeding right away. Pa lay there on a couch they had carried out of